First place I'll be looking at this evening is Hebrews, the 5th chapter, verse 14, if you want to be turning there. Hebrews 5 and verse 14 speaks of how that as we grow into maturity, we must have our senses exercised to discern both good and evil. And I think as we learn to discern good and evil, one of the questions we're going to be confronted with is the question of dancing. Is this something that we should or should not be involved in? And that's what I want us to explore tonight. And I want to begin by talking about what I'm concerned with, what I'm going to be dealing with. If you look up the definition of dancing, you know, a dictionary may say it's a rhythmic movement set to music. And I am not concerned with every possible rhythmic movement set to dance. I mean, set to music. You know, a song leader who's beating time is making a rhythmic movement that is in accompany with the music. That's not the kind of thing I'm concerned about. There was dancing that was in a part of the Old Testament worship. Miriam in Exodus 15. And we find references in the Psalms. There was obviously, even though we find no reference to dance as part of New Testament worship, there was nothing lewd, vulgar, evil about that kind of thing. So that's not what I have in mind. What I'm talking about is the kind of dance you would see in a club, you would see at a prom or a homecoming dance, you would see on a show like Dancing with the Stars. It's when two bodies are held close to one another as they do their rhythmic movements, or they stand apart from one another and they engage in sensual movements. That's what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about, really. You know, it's not that every time somebody makes a rhythmic movement that we're concerned about that. This is what we're talking about. And what I want to do tonight is just ask you a series of questions. Ask you to consider them. One of them, the first one I want to begin with is, does it have to be specifically condemned? Sometimes if others raise an objection to dancing, first thing out of somebody's mouth is like, well, it never says you can't dance in the Bible. Well, I think we recognize there are things that are not specifically mentioned in the Bible and yet are unquestionably wrong. Pornography is never specifically mentioned in the Bible. But who would, in their right mind, argue that Hebrews 5:14, when it talks about having your senses exercised to discern good and evil, would not discern, well, that's an evil. It violates, and you would begin to name scriptural principles. And that we do that with many things. The fact that in Galatians, the 5th chapter, passage that was read for us a little earlier by Randall, as he concludes the works of the flesh, he simply says, and the like. Things like these. Which is a way of saying, I didn't name every possible work of the flesh. Now, I want you to understand at this point, I'm not saying, you know, the old dodge, anytime somebody says, well, where is it condemned, that you can just simply say, well, it's in the like. You know, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is, it's not an answer, it's not a defense to say, what's never specifically mentioned. God didn't specifically mention everything. Paul admits such in Galatians 5:21. The Hebrew writer says, you have to grow and think through some things and realize it. But I want you to think through some things with me tonight. I want to ask the question, have you considered, there in the works of the flesh, what the word lewdness means? Verse 19 says, now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness. Your Bible may say lasciviousness. It might say licentiousness. It may say sensuality. These are all words that you will find used to translate this one Greek word. A word that Vine says basically means a lack of restraint. Somebody that doesn't have the brakes on. They're not stopping from doing things they ought to do. Thayer says it, basically what he's saying, it can be illustrated, the kinds of things that reflect this lack of restraint are filthy words, indecent bodily movements, unchaste handling of males and females. Now here is the question I would raise. Would you consider the movements that take place on a dance floor decent? The handling that takes place in the tango, the various dances, is that chaste? The word chaste means innocent and pure. Would you categorize them that way, or do you believe maybe they fit into the category of what Paul called lewdness, sensuality? You know, if you stop the music and people were engaged in the same embraces, in the same movements, how would you feel about it? You know, I can remember years ago there was a cartoon, a little Theophilus cartoon. There showed a young boy. The Theophilus cartoons were basically a big, gigantic head and then little stick legs. But he was on crutches, had a black eye, and his friend said, "What happened to you?" He said, "My girlfriend's dad caught us dancing." And the friend said, "So what?" And said, "He didn't hear any music." You know, oh, now, what would be the difference? Really, honestly, folks, just answer that. I want to ask you, and I ask this in all seriousness, do you consider lust, sexual desire, a serious matter? In Hebrews, Matthew 5, got so used to saying Hebrews 5:14. I want to say Hebrews 5 again, but it's Matthew 5 and verse 27. Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Jesus said, what you're thinking matters. And the reason I ask the question this way, do you consider this a serious thing, is most people today don't. They consider this a joke. It's a big joke to say, you know, so-and-so was lusting, so-and-so, are you going to lust after this? It's a joke. Do you think Jesus laughed right after he said this? You know, when he said that what you're thinking in your heart, if you are desiring these things, even though you may not carry it out, he said it's a problem. If you consider it a serious thing, then I want to ask, do you consider yourself subject to this temptation? Could it happen to you? Could you be the reason for somebody else having desires they should not? Paul told Timothy, 2 Timothy 2 verse 22, flee youthful lust. If you go to a dance and you take a young lady in your arms, you're taken in the arms of a young man, you're held close together in a dimly lit on a dimly lit floor, does that help you flee youthful lust? Or does that push yourself a little closer to them? Look at Romans, the 13th chapter, in verse 13. Let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lust. Now, I want you to understand, Paul is not an ascetic. And he writes in the book of Colossians very strongly about those people who act as though anything that is enjoyable is a bad thing. That's not Paul at all. And yet he said, you don't make any allowance for the lust of the flesh. What does the dance floor do? Does it make no provision? Or does it open the door wide, or at least crack the door open? Can you honestly say, I am determined I will make no provision for the flesh. I'm not going to allow its lust into my life. And I'm going to choose to be dancing. In Galatians, the 5th chapter, in verse 24, we read, "Those who are Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires." Crucify is put to death. You have just said, this will be no more. Hopefully we've all done that. That's the determination we've made in our lives, that it's to be killed. If it's killed, do you think the dance floor, is that a good place to keep it killed? Or do we provide a resurrection there? Do we revive the crucified flesh? James 4 and verse 7, he said, "Resist the devil and he will flee from you." Will dancing help you with that? Would you consider that resisting? Or maybe Ephesians 4 and verse 26, and he specifically is here talking about anger. When he says, "Be angry and do not sin, do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil." The word place, room, opportunity. And really the idea of a place is, give him a spot. And he's saying here, when you don't get control of your anger, that may not be sin immediately, but you're letting the devil in. What does the dance floor do? Does it resist, strengthen us, or does it give an opening? In Ephesians, the 6th chapter, he says, "Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand." I know there are exceptions, but more times than not, the dresses that will be worn to the proms are going to be one of these or a combination of these: strapless, low cut, backless, slit, you know, way up the side. Do you feel in something like that, that you are equipped to resist the devil, to fight off the fiery darts of the wicked one? And young men, if you are standing or sitting next to or out on the floor with a young lady dressed like that, do you feel like you have put on the whole armor of God so that you can resist? Or do you feel like you have compromised your defenses? Think about that. Think about it. I want you to answer a couple of questions. I don't know that you may find this silly, but I want you to think about something in Genesis, the 37th chapter. You know the story of Joseph, 39th chapter, rather. 39th chapter, verse 7. "And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, 'Lie with me.' But he refused and said to his master's wife, 'Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?' So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her." Would you view Joseph differently if the latter part of verse 10 had said, he did not heed her to lie with her, but he agreed to dance with her? They would slow dance every afternoon. Would you look at this story a little differently? Or what about in 2 Samuel, the 11th chapter? Would you have respect for David if when he saw Bathsheba and he learns verse 3 that she's the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? Instead of actual adultery, but he sent for another man's wife and they danced the night away? You wouldn't find that acceptable. You might say, well, it's not as bad as adultery, but you wouldn't find it acceptable, would you? Why? What would David have been doing with her that was unacceptable? What would Joseph have been doing with Potiphar's wife? Will your light shine brighter there? Matthew, the 5th chapter, verse 13. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. We have a serious responsibility to be a saving influence in this world. To be a bright and shining light that will reflect the glory of God. That will lead others unto Christ. Do we think that our light shines brighter when we're engaged in dancing? When we go to the dance? Does it make others appreciate our holiness more? Paul told Timothy. He said that you are to be an example to the believers. Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. One of the reasons I'm doing this time of year, and maybe I'm too late for a lot of the proms, is the prom is one of the prominent events of this time of the year. But this is not just an issue of high schoolers anymore. As we see clubs springing up, we see dances at wedding receptions. You think Timothy went out clubbing? And that was the way he kept people from despising his youth. Another thing to think about, something we talked about this morning, could your choices lead another to sin? Going back to the Matthew 5, 27 and 28, your dress, the way you move, the holding together, the bodies, the hands. You think it's possible that on a dance floor that unlawful desires are fostered and that you would be the cause of that? Is it possible that someone will know, well, he's a Christian, she's a Christian, they're going to the dance, they go to the club, it must be okay. They go, they get involved in things that are wrong. Could that happen? Could we be that cause? I remind you what we looked at this morning in Luke 17. He said to His disciples, "It is impossible that no offenses should come, but woe to him through whom they do come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea than that he should offend one of these little ones." You don't want to be the reason for somebody else's sin. You need to think about that. People are watching. People are influenced by us. Particularly, how many times do people say, well, if he, she, they're Christians, they do this, it must be okay. Better be sure. And that's really, I want you to look at Romans the 14th chapter. Who can really do this with absolute certainty? in light of the kind of questions we've raised tonight. And there are others I could have raised. And I've got one other important question I'm going to ask in just a moment. But in light of all of this, can you say, I can go to the dance, I can be a part of this activity, and I am 100% certain there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I know that it was not any kind of lewd activity. I know that it would never tempt anybody else to sin. I know that it won't give the flesh its opportunity. It won't allow the devil into my life. It won't diminish the shining of my light. You just know all of that. Are you sure? Really? Romans 14:23 says, "But he who doubts is condemned if he eats, because he does not eat from faith. For whatever is not from faith is sin." And Paul was saying here that even if it was right, but you had doubts, then you better not do it. I guess I have trouble believing that anybody could look at all the questions we've raised tonight, consider all the evidence, and not at least have doubts. If they're not convinced it's wrong, they would have doubts. Read it. And parents, before you give permission, maybe you ought to read it again too. And say, am I really sure I want to do this? I want to allow this? The last question. 1 John, the second chapter, in verse 28, John says, "And now, little children, abide in Him, that when He appears, we may have confidence and not be ashamed before Him at His coming." If Jesus were to come during the middle of the prom, if Jesus were to come while you were at the club, would you be ashamed? Would you be like Adam and Eve in the garden, hiding yourself, you know, if it were possible? Or would you have confidence and say, just soon be here as anywhere? Really? Be honest here. Think about it. I'm about to say something that's going to shock you. That's all. I'm finished. One of the shortest lessons I've ever preached. But I want you to look at, again at Hebrews 5:14. I want to ask you, maybe you all thought the way I thought before this, but Hebrews 5 and verse 14, well, let's back it up to verse 12 and let's read the entire context. "For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God, and you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But solid food belongs to those who are full age, that is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil." I hope that you'll take the thoughts we've presented tonight and that you'll really think about them and you'll consider these questions and you will discern. I just believe it has to fall on the side of evil. It's not on the side of good. But I want you to think about it and consider it. I understand this is not always easy. And, you know, in some schools, in some areas, it's such a part of the culture. It's not easy to be the holy people that He describes in 1 Peter 1 and verse 13 when He says, "Therefore gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust as in your ignorance, but as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, 'Be holy, for I am holy. I genuinely understand it's not easy sometimes to make choices that are different from those around you. To be one of the few, maybe in a class that doesn't go. Be one of the the few at work that doesn't go to this place or that. But if you keep reading, he says, look what we were redeemed by. If you call on the Father who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear, knowing that you are not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. That Christ died for us ought to make it easier to be the people He wants us to be. If it were me asking you to abstain from these things, it would be easy to say, well, who is He to ask that of me? But this is the one who died for you, who's asking holiness, purity, dedication. We can do that for Him. We truly can live for the one who died for us. Are you doing that? If you're not, this evening, make it right with Him. If you can, if you're determined this evening to put away sin and live for Jesus, won't you be baptized into Christ? We're here to help you. Why don't you come as we stand and sing together?